Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Nearly a week after the condo collapse in South Florida, the search for survivors continues. As the focus shifts to accountability, the question is, could criminal charges be filed? Plus, a stunning error throws the New York City mayor's race into even more confusion. The question is, does anyone have any idea where this race currently stands? And the latest on the scorching heat as the city of Spokane suffers through its hottest day on record. The question this morning, is there any relief in sight? It's way too early for this. Good morning and welcome to Way Too Early, the show that can't quite believe that Portland, Oregon recorded a higher temperature than Dallas or Los Angeles ever have recorded. Wow. I am Casey Hunt on this Wednesday, June 30th. We'll start with the news. We're now entering day seven since a portion of a 12-story beachfront condo building came crashing down in the middle of the night. 12 people are now confirmed to have died, while 149 still remain unaccounted for. More than 50 agencies and 900 personnel are working at the site, including teams from Israel and Mexico. No one has been pulled alive from the mountain of rubble since Thursday morning, just hours after the collapse. Despite it all, no one's giving up hope.
One woman in Bangladesh was pulled out of the rubble crying after 17 days. So, you know, we're not losing hope. We're not slowing down. We're not giving up. We're going to pull everybody out of that rubble, and we're hoping and praying for some miracles.
You know, these are the times that are the most difficult, you know, but it's we're here to do a job. We're here with a passion. You know, this is what we do. And, you know, hopefully we have some success.
A possible hindrance to search efforts, two different weather systems are being tracked by the National Hurricane Center. And officials are now asking for more crews from FEMA to free up resources in case either storm hits the state next week. From the beginning, rain and strong storms have hampered searchers who have removed some 3 million pounds of concrete so far. And on Thursday, the president and first lady will travel to Surfside. The White House says they want to thank first responders, search and rescue teams, and everyone who's been working to try to find survivors. The Bidens will also meet with families and loved ones of those killed and still unaccounted for 1 week after the condo partially collapsed. The administration says it's coordinating the visit to make sure that no resources will be taken away from rescue efforts. Florida officials, meanwhile, are pledging to begin several investigations into the deadly collapse. State Attorney Catherine Fernandez-Rundle will pursue a grand jury investigation to examine factors and decisions that led to the Champlain Towers disaster. She also raised the possibility of potential criminal investigations. In addition, Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava will meet with engineering, construction, and geology experts to review building safety issues and develop recommendations to ensure that a tragedy like this never happens again. We'll keep you posted on those rescue efforts, but let's go now to politics. During his stop in Wisconsin yesterday, President Biden offered an impassioned defense of the bipartisan infrastructure bill as a symbol that democracy can work. Watch.
The reason this agreement matters so much is about what it represents. This deal isn't just the sum of its parts. It's a signal to ourselves and to the world that American democracy can come through and deliver for all our people. We can be united. I just met with the G7. I just met with all of NATO. I just met with Putin. The autocrats think that democracy can't keep up with autocrats. Not a joke. But it's living proof we can still come together in this country and accomplish something big and transformational. I know that neither Democrats nor Republicans get everything they want in this agreement. It's not all that I propose. But that's what our economy is all about. That's what it means to compromise and reach consensus. And that's what in the heart of every democracy.
And the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, is moving forward with plans to link the bipartisan infrastructure agreement to a second reconciliation bill that would be Democrats supported. According to The Hill, in a closed-door meeting with her caucus yesterday, Pelosi said her original strategy of withholding an infrastructure vote until the Senate passes a larger partisan families plan remains unchanged. The news comes after Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell insisted on Monday that the two pieces of legislation be separated. Here's what he said yesterday about where things stand.
So where we are now is we're in kind of a stare down about whether one is connected to the other. And what I'd like to see is to, what I know the 20 members, including 10 Democrats in the Senate, would like to do is to pass the thing we can agree on. And then we'll have a debate and an argument and a vote over all the rest.
All right. Joining us now, congressional reporter for Politico, Andrew Desiderio. Andrew, good morning. I have to say, thank you for being here, first of all. But second of all, Mitch McConnell is always so much more. He's just chatty when he goes home to Kentucky, which is where he is right now, because the Senate is on break, just kind of walking through the process of what he'd like to see. It's not often how he approaches things when he's here in Washington and tends to be more tight-lipped. This clearly is, as he put it, a stare down between the Republicans in the Senate, and of course, what Nancy Pelosi is promising to do, made more difficult by the fact that the president said this out loud. Is there any progress being made behind the scenes? I mean, how long we've been having this conversation for quite a while now about linking these or not. But what's your latest reporting say about how Republicans in the Senate in particular are feeling about their willingness to support the bipartisan deal, even as Democrats like Nancy Pelosi continues to tell her caucus, you know what, even if they send it over here, we're not holding a vote until they send the second package also?
In short, there's been little to no progress, Casey. And one of the reasons why is that Democrats from across the spectrum, moderates to progressives, are making these different sort of demands on A, the linkage of these two bills, and B, the scale and scope of the second Democrat-only bill that they're intending to pass, which includes a lot of President Biden's priorities that were left out, of course, of the bipartisan infrastructure package. You saw that sort of come to a head yesterday in a Democratic caucus meeting when John Yarmuth, the House Budget Committee chairman, was basically pleading with his fellow Democrats, saying, look, don't talk about top line numbers. Don't draw any red lines in the sand on what you do or do not want to see in this second Democrat-only spending package, because that only makes things harder because, you know, in the House, Democrats only have a majority margin of a few votes. And in the Senate, of course, it's a 50-50 majority, so they can't afford to lose any vote at all. And you're going to need agreement from everyone. From Joe Manchin to Bernie Sanders on that big spending bill. So it's pretty fragile right now. Right. And Democrats on both sides, on the House side and the Senate side, are figuring out what's the best way to message this and what's the best way to get it written into legislation so that everybody can agree.
Andrew, if this all collapses and essentially we see not much of anything happen, who pays the price for that?
Well, the country pays the price for that, frankly. You know, Democrats and Republicans have been talking for years. I mean, we remember all of the jokes under the Trump administration about, hey, it's finally infrastructure week and we're going to finally get this done. You know, Democrats and Republicans keep talking for years and years and years about our crumbling infrastructure and, hey, we need to address this. So, you know, it's really the country that's going to lose out on this because this really is a bipartisan priority. But politically, this would be pretty devastating to President Biden's agenda here. The president has made this a top priority, if not the top priority, post the big COVID relief package, of course, that they passed through both chambers earlier this year. And Republicans would be satisfied by, you know, denying President Biden a legislative win like that. So politically, there's obviously going to be a lot of finger pointing if this does all fall apart. But I think President Biden has the most to lose here.
Yeah, no, it's a sharp observation. And frankly, I think the success of this bipartisan bill is really going to depend on whether both Republicans and Democrats believe at the end of the day it's in their political interest to get it done. I don't think it's ceased to be in both in the political interest of both parties. But that's kind of the dynamic I'm watching for. Politico's Andrew Desiderio, thank you, as always, my friend, for being here. We really appreciate it. And still ahead here, we're going to have the very latest from Wimbledon. Serena Williams says she's heartbroken after pulling out because of a leg injury. Plus, confusion takes hold in the race for New York City mayor after a discrepancy in vote totals. We're going to have those stories and a check on that extreme heat gripping much of the country when we come right back.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Pass to Capella. He is surrounded. He is double teamed. Fires one up and hits it behind the backboard.
Wow. With the shot clock winding down, Atlanta's Clint Capella sinks his shot from behind the backboard to extend the Hawks' lead in last night's 110-88 victory over the Milwaukee Bucks. That's crazy. The Eastern Conference Finals series now tied at two games apiece. Neither of each team's biggest stars finished game four. While Atlanta's Trae Young was ruled out with a bone bruise prior to tip-off, Milwaukee lost Giannis Antetokounmpo with just over 7 minutes to play in the third quarter after he hyperextended his left knee. Ouch. The two-time MVP is expected to undergo an MRI surgery today. The status for both stars is unclear heading into game five tomorrow night. All right, let's turn now to Major League Baseball, where Mariners reliever Hector Santiago will appeal a 10-game ban announced yesterday for having a foreign substance in his glove. The 33-year-old lefty became the first player to be punished under the league's new crackdown on foreign substances when he was ejected from Sunday's game against the White Sox. Santiago later admitted he used legal rosin on his glove side that turned sticky after it mixed with his sweat. All right, let's go to the nation's capital now, where Washington slugger Kyle Schwarber extended his historic streak in last night's 4-3 win over the Tampa Bay Rays. Schwarber hit the first pitch he saw out to the right field seats, his seventh leadoff homer and 25th of the season. With 12 home runs in 10 games, Schwarber ties an MLB mark set back in 1995 and also matches Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa with 16 home runs hit over an 18-game stretch. Wow. Look at that. Nice. And in New York City, Angels two-way star Shohei Ohtani clubbed a pair of home runs last night, his third in the last two games at Yankee Stadium. That boosts his tally to a league-leading 28 so far this season. But it wasn't enough to put L.A. past New York as the Yankees surged to a season-high 11-5 victory. And finally, the first round of the Wimbledon tennis tournament continues this morning, but Serena Williams will no longer be competing for a record-matching 24th Grand Slam title at the All England Club. The seven-time Wimbledon champ retired during the first set of her opening round match yesterday after slipping and injuring her right leg. Ouch. An emotional Williams fought back tears before exiting the court and didn't talk to the media afterward, though later said on social media she was heartbroken to have to withdraw and thanked fans for their support. We wish her a speedy recovery. Meanwhile, her sister Venus Williams began her record-extended 90th Grand Slam tournament with her 90th career victory, winning in three sets yesterday to advance to the next round. And on the men's side, Adrian Mannarino also fell victim to slick conditions on center court, injuring his knee after a slip during the fourth set of yesterday's first round match against Roger Federer. The injury forced Mannarino to withdraw. Ouch. Federer, an eight-time Wimbledon champ, moves on to the second round, where he'll continue his bid for a 21st Grand Slam title. All right, time now for the weather. Let's go to meteorologist Bill Cairns for a check on the forecast. Bill, that map is ugly. It says it all.
It's just, yeah, it's not pretty. It's just hot. It's uncomfortable. Air conditioners are just working hard. And, you know, one more day of this, KC, in the Northeast, and then much cooler for the holiday weekend. Probably a little too cool for a lot of people's liking. So when you get these heat waves, the reason they mostly are dangerous is obviously for people that don't have air conditioning. And at night, it just doesn't cool off. You don't get that relief. I mean, especially in the big cities. I mean, New York City still feels like 84 degrees right now, warmest easily on the map. And it's because of the heat island effect. All the pavement and all the buildings trap the heat during the day, and it just doesn't release. 82 still in Boston right now. In D.C. and Philly, it's not exactly comfortable either. You're walking out the door, and it feels like 79 and 78. So later on today, we still got about 43 million people under heat advisories. We do have people from Philadelphia up to Trenton, just out outside of New York City in the Newark area, that are under excessive heat warnings. Yesterday, by the way, was the warmest day in Boston in 9 years. It was the warmest it's been in New York in about 1 year. So again, it was, you know, yesterday was hot. It wasn't exactly a typical summer day. And today will be the same. Upper 90s in most locations from Boston to New York to Philly. D.C. should top out around 96, and the heat index will peak at around 100 to 105. What's different today is that thunderstorms are going to cool off the Northeast later this afternoon. Some of these will be strong. We even have a chance of an isolated tornado or two between Albany and Boston later on this afternoon into this evening. So these thunderstorms will start by Syracuse and Albany and Portland and then shift southwards. They should reach Hartford and New York City as we go throughout the later on this evening. So for today's forecast, it's still hot in the west, but it's not like it was. Yesterday was the 80s, Seattle and Portland. Today would be the same. It's still very hot in areas like Boise, but we're kind of getting back to normal. And then as we look at your Thursday forecast, much cooler in the Northeast, Casey, and it's going to be a soggy Thursday in the Northeast, too. And we'll talk more about the holiday forecast coming up tomorrow.
All right. I hope everybody can stay cool and safe out there. Bill Cairns, thank you very much, my friend. Really appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow. And still ahead here, we've got new questions about whether coronavirus mask mandates might be necessary again, even for those who've been vaccinated because of concerns over the Delta variant. We'll be back in just a moment.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Welcome back. The Democratic primary race for New York City mayor got even more confusing last night, with election officials releasing and then retracting their latest vote count. Just hours after posting new results that showed former City Sanitation Commissioner Catherine Garcia drastically cutting into the lead of former police captain Eric Adams, the city's Board of Elections removed those results from its website. According to the BOE, 135,000 votes that were put into its system for testing purposes only had never been cleared. This caused Adams' 10-point lead to shrink to a mere 2 points. Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president, had already raised concerns about the election process even before this mix-up. New York City used a ranked choice voting system for this year's primary, a method which had never been used by the city before and never tried anywhere in this country on this scale. In a statement, the Board of Elections apologized for the error and said it had taken, quote, immediate measures to ensure the most accurate, up-to-date results are reported. Yikes. All right, now this. When it comes to fighting COVID, there is once again confusion over whether fully vaccinated people need to wear face masks indoors. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer explains.
Mass confusion as a growing number of top doctors in now the most populous county in the nation, Los Angeles, says even the vaccinated should wear a mask and keep their social distance indoors.
We're flying by the seat of our pants here.
Breaking from CDC guidance, LA County is now aligned with the WHO, urging universal mask use in public spaces indoors, citing the spread of the Delta variant for the new voluntary safety measure.
I wanted to wear a mask today.
Even the Illinois governor setting an example, but the backtrack on guidance just before gatherings for the 4th of July is sending mixed messages.
Implementing a mask mandate in the absence of broader spread of the virus is likely to erode the ability to implement these kinds of measures when we need them. We need to give the public a breather.
Gaining ground every day, the highly contagious and dangerous Delta variant now accounts for 26% of COVID cases in the U.S. And now a new small study says mRNA vaccines may provide protection for years with caveats, some even suggesting those vaccinated with J&J get a booster with an mRNA vaccine.
There's been a lot of questions about whether Americans need boosters and when they'll need boosters. What's your take on that?
Many Americans aren't likely to require or need boosters. I think it's likely to be reserved for a certain segment of the population, people who are older, people who are more at risk from COVID, people who are further out from completing their original vaccination.
An evolving virus and yet another shift on where and when to wear a mask. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
And coming up on Morning Joe, Dr. Anthony Fauci will join the conversation. All right, still ahead here, House Democrats are moving ahead with a committee to investigate the January 6th riot, but top Republicans are pushing back. Plus, President Biden makes another impromptu stop for ice cream, his favorite, this time during a trip to Wisconsin. But before we go to break, we want to know, as always, why are you awake? Email us your reasons for being up and watching to waytooearly at MSNBC.com or drop me a tweet at Casey. Use the hashtag waytooearly and we'll read some of our favorite answers coming up later on in the show. Welcome back to Way Too Early. It is 5:30 here on the East Coast, 2:30 out West. I'm Casey Hunt. House Republican leaders are discouraging the creation of a select committee to investigate the January 6th Capitol riot. In a memo to all party members yesterday, Minority Whip Steve Scalise said the planned House panel is, quote, likely to pursue a partisan agenda and encouraged Republicans to vote against it. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy also declined to say whether Republicans would even participate in the investigation. A vote on a resolution that would create the panel is scheduled for later today. Meanwhile, police reform negotiations, once seen as possibly the most likely issue to find a bipartisan compromise, could be on the brink of collapse. Infighting between different law enforcement groups is threatening the future of the bill, despite lawmakers announcing last week that they'd come together on a framework. Outside special interest groups are playing a critical role in the negotiation. As NBC News reports, sheriffs who cover most rural areas have one organization, but urban police officers are divided, with unionized officers represented by one organization and police chiefs by another. Instead of unifying, the negotiations have left these law enforcement groups feuding. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey was able to get backing for a compromise from several police unions, but Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina insisted that any deal must also be approved by the National Sheriffs Association. Joining us now, the author of the Washington Post's early morning newsletter, Power Up, Jacqueline Alemany. Jackie, it's always good to see you. This is some reporting that my colleague Leanne Caldwell did, very good reporting about how the divides among law enforcement agencies could make it harder to get some sort of compromise here. How do you think this plays out over the course of the next week or two? Tim Scott had said, we have to finish this in June or we're not getting a deal. We are about to head into July.
Right, Casey. And I actually caught Karen Bass, a congresswoman who's been working on that team that's been trying to hash out this framework to get something done in a bipartisan manner. I caught her in the hallways of Congress yesterday, and she remained pretty tight-lipped about the progress that the group has made so far. Basically, they put out a press release last week that said that they still disagreed on a variety of issues after working on this for months now. I had sources telling me that Tim Scott was telling local officials and lawmakers in South Carolina that he thought that he might be able to get nearly 20 Republican votes on this. Others in Washington, D.C. were highly skeptical that Mitch McConnell would allow that to happen. Sort of the thinking being that Republicans, you know, fighting to win the majority back would be reticent to give Joe Biden a win on something like this. And lawmakers have expressed, especially Republicans, have expressed a lot of reticence to sort of making these concessions, especially on issues like qualified immunity that Leanne gets into in her piece. But now that crime and portraying Democrats as soft on crime going into 2022 midterms has become such a hot button issue, it remains, it looks like it's even unlikelier that lawmakers at the end of the day are going to be able to come to some sort of bipartisan agreement on this.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to underscore the way that the rise in violent crime is affecting politicking ahead of the midterm elections, makes it much more difficult to get Republicans potentially on board for something like this. Jackie, let's talk about the Capitol riot here for a second, because obviously Republicans had already rejected a bipartisan commission. Now the House Speaker is going to hold a vote to create a select committee. It's structured very similarly to how Republicans structured the Benghazi investigation. Democrats went back and forth at that time about whether they should even participate in it, and ultimately they decided it was better to have a seat at the table and be able to influence things at least a little bit than it was to sit the whole thing out. We don't know yet how Republicans are going to handle this, but I mean, what would it say if, in fact, the Select Committee is formed and Republicans simply refuse to even show up to sit down at an investigation into the breach of their own building?
Unfortunately, that seems like a pretty likely outcome at the moment. This is something that Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has remained pretty quiet on, declined to respond to answers to reporters in the hallways on this. And a number of lawmakers who have been asked point blank whether or not they would sit on the committee if they were asked by McCarthy or House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that they most likely wouldn't do so, or were waiting on word from McCarthy about the direction that the party was heading in. So far, he's obviously been whipping his members to vote no on this select committee today. But I think that the decision to potentially decline to participate in this select committee in the eyes of the Republican Party would at least help contribute to this idea that this is a partisan witch hunt. That is why there was a desire to create an independent commission in the first place that obviously failed. And so a select committee is what Nancy Pelosi initially wanted to avoid to avoid those appearances of partisanship. Having Republicans not even participate in a select committee would, I think, further illuminate or potentially lend itself to the appearances of this partisanship atmosphere. But look, you had people like Liz Cheney, who didn't answer the question when asked by reporters whether she would sit on the committee if asked by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. So there are a number of wild cards today that we're going to be scrambling for and looking out for.
Right. And some suggestions that Pelosi would definitely want to pick a Republican to sit on the committee, perhaps for these exact reasons we've been discussing. The Washington Post, Jacqueline Alemany, thank you very much for being with us this morning. We really appreciate it. And still ahead here, one reporter's hypothetical that sets the scene for a totally different pair of political castaways. Way too early. Back in just a moment. Now for something totally different. You were just watching a little bit of Tom Hanks in the 2000 movie Castaway with his volleyball, Wilson. That was his only company on a deserted island. So maybe not a volleyball, But what about a former president of the United States? One reporter asked Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell which living Democratic president he would choose to be on a desert island with. Would he pick Carter, Clinton, Obama, or Biden? Obama and Carter were quickly dismissed, although the reporter did note that Carter might be helpful in building a shelter. From the two remaining choices, McConnell said this.
Well, I would pick Biden. Biden and I did four bipartisan deals together during the Obama administration. I consider him a personal friend. I was the only Republican that went to his son Beau's funeral. So that would be an easy choice. I think Biden's a first-rate person.
Not sure if that's gonna how that's gonna play with Biden's supporters, but there you go. Meanwhile, it is absolutely no secret that President Biden loves ice cream. And in true form, the commander-in-chief made an unscheduled stop at a Wisconsin ice cream parlor after delivering his speech on infrastructure.
You're not getting in Rocky Road for infrastructure?
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of Rocky Road, but we're gonna get it done.
Oh boy, okay. The president opted for cookies and cream and strawberry on a sugar cone and picked up the tab for the governor and other officials who were with him. Very nice. We could all use some ice cream today. It's so hot outside. All right, now this. Vogue's August cover features First Lady Dr. Jill Biden. In her interview with the fashion magazine, Dr. Biden opens up about balancing the responsibility of being in the White House with teaching full time. She stressed the importance of doing both jobs, saying in part, quote, I heard all the time during the campaign, like, no. You're not going to be able to teach as First Lady. And I said, why not? You make things happen, right? Seriously, good for her. And the Statue of Liberty's little sister will meet its big sister this morning. 135 years after gifting the original Lady Liberty, France has sent a second, smaller version across the Atlantic for this year's July 4th in celebration of the two nations' partnership. Standing at 9 feet tall and weighing 1,000 pounds, the bronze replica has been in Paris since 2009. The statue set sail last week on board a container ship following the same route of the original. And it arrives this morning in New York Harbor and will be placed facing the big sister, remaining there through July 5th. The smaller statue will then be transported to the French ambassador's residence here in D.C., where it's set to stay for the next decade. All right, still ahead here, President Obama sounds the alarm about the erosion of American democracy. Former Congressman Joe Crowley will weigh in on what's changed since he left office after two decades representing his New York City district. And as we go to break, let's take a look at this date in history. 36 years ago, 39 Americans from a hijacked TWA jetliner were freed in Beirut after being held for 17 days.
The ancient road to Damascus. Tonight, a road to freedom for 39 American hostages. Once across the Syrian border from Lebanon, they felt great relief.
Feel very good.
Yeah.
Very good to be going home.
The degree to which misinformation is now disseminated at warp speed in coordinated ways that we haven't seen before. And that the guardrails I thought were in place around many of our democratic institutions really depend on the two parties agreeing to those ground rules, those guardrails, and that one of them right now doesn't seem as committed to them as in previous generations. That worries me, and I think we should all be worried.
An increasingly vocal former President Obama addressing the annual conference of the American Library Association yesterday and whether he's optimistic about the strength of our civic institutions. Joining us now, former Democratic Congressman Joe Crowley of New York. Congressman, it's always good to see you. Thank you so much for getting up early to be with us. So we always love your backdrop, by the way, even at this early hour. can you reflect a little bit on what we just heard there from President Obama, former President Obama, because I know, I mean, I've spent the last four, you know, going on 5 years now covering the Trump era and the aftermath. And there was this persistent sense when we first started with that administration that there was faith in this, in our civic institutions. The center would hold in some way. I had Republicans telling me they want to be the ballast in the ship of state through turbulent times. But there are a lot of signs here 6 months out. And of course, it was all capped by the riot on the Capitol, that perhaps there are some problems that we won't be able to overcome. I mean, what is your level of optimism about the state of our democracy right now?
Well, I, too, am concerned about it. I think we are a strong democracy, and I think that has been evident, especially since January 6th. We are resilient. We have come back. But as my good friend Tim Ryan said, we have one party that's not dealing in reality. And that's the Republican Party right now. They're not willing to face obvious truths and dismissive of them. The worst of it, I think, was evident on the events after January 6th by Leader McCarthy and kind of doing a 180 immediately after calling the president out. Then suggested, you know, well, it really wasn't his fault. You know, so much has gone on. The inability to put this commission together in a bipartisan way is really reflective of that. The institution itself was attacked, and yet they are not willing to come forward and actually work in a bipartisan way to prevent that from happening in the future, no matter who's doing it. And I think that's really reflective of the quagmire that Washington has gone in today.
Can you, speaking of January 6th, I mean, we're talking about this select committee now. Pelosi, the speaker, is going to hold a vote on it later today. But there are huge mm-hmm. questions about whether Republicans are going to even participate at all. I mean, what kind of message do you think it sends? And I remember Democrats thought about this with Benghazi. They considered, okay, maybe we just try and demonstrate that this is not valid by not showing up. In the end, you decided to participate. But this seems like a completely different situation to me. I mean, a refusal to participate in an investigation into the invasion of your own house.
Yeah, I think back then the Republicans questioned, Democrats questioned, the motivation of Republicans. I think, you know, clearly what was a very political invoked use of that select committee process to go after then presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Here you had the House of Representatives itself attacked. I mean, that happened. One member of Congress saying was like a normal day on Capitol Hill, a tourist day. It's an insult to every American and every human being who watched the events that day, not the least of which were the police officers. I was up on Capitol Hill last week. I talked to one of the police officers. He said he had a number of ribs that were cracked that day. And I never recollected in my 20 years on Capitol Hill where a police officer was attacked like that. So they're not really, again, not living in the reality that we're all watching. And that's the problem. That's why we can't get things done in Washington right now.
It is rather striking how completely different the universes are for each side right now. Congressman, while I have you, can I ask you about the New York City mayoral race?
Sure.
We're talking about, you know, faith and democracy. Why is it that our biggest city in the country can't count the votes? I mean, what is going on?
I think they will eventually get there. I do think that the men and women who work there at the Board of Election, you know, they want to do the right thing. We are the largest city in the country.
Yeah.
And this has never been done on this scale before. There have been a lot of questions about the ranked choice voting system itself. But New York elections have always been fairly complicated. I think in the end, though, that Eric Adams is ahead. I think will continue to be there. Apparently they had a glitch here. They counted votes to that should have been counted because it was doing a test. You know, it's unfortunate. The Board of Elections has had these kind of issues in the past and probably will continue to have them in the future. But I will say this, you know, I don't think anyone really is really questioning the integrity of the election itself. There's been a glitch. We all expect the results by July 12th. We always expected that to begin with.
All right. Well, I would say that obviously in an era of such disinformation, making sure that people can have faith in our elections is a really important project at the moment.
It would help.
Get it straightened out. Yeah. All right. Former Congressman Joe Crowley, thank you very much for getting up early with us. We really appreciate it. I'll see you soon. And earlier on in the show, we asked all of you, why are you awake? Dominic writes, why am I awake? It's moving day. Oh, moving day. I hope that it's cooler where you live than here. Another viewer tweeted this. Milo wanted a drink from the bathtub faucet. Way too early. Hey, Milo. Good luck with that. And Chris emails us this picture of his morning bike ride as the sun rises over Niagara Falls. Well, that is beautiful. Thanks for sending that in. All right, coming up next, we're going to take a look at the Axios One Big Thing. And coming up on Morning Joe, a live report from Surfside, Florida, where the search for survivors continues nearly 1 week after that devastating condominium collapse. And as we mentioned, Dr. Anthony Fauci will join the conversation as Americans get ready to celebrate July 4th and the nation's independence from the pandemic. Morning Joe, just moments away.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.